the Dumb Nerd Thing. While it has been a minute since I've put one of these out on iTunes and Spotify, I am doing regular streams now for live recordings of the podcast on twitch.tv/dumbnerdthing. Every other weekend, I'll record an episode of the show, and every Thursday, I'll also stream either an episode of our Star Wars RPG that I've home-cooked, or just a video game, depending on people's availability. Again, that's twitch.tv/dumbnerdthing. But enough about that. Today, we've got my friend Katie on to talk about the classics. While she gives a great definition of what that means in the episode, I'll just spoil it here that this means the study of Latin, Greek, language, and literature. What's really fun about this episode is that producer Colin also studied the classics right alongside Katie, and's here to help facilitate the conversation. It's really beautiful to hear their love and passion for the subject, so I hope you enjoy. Come on, man, I told you!
You set me up.
Speaking of setups, hey! Welcome to Dumb Nerd Thing.
Hi, thank you.
Quick.
Who are you?
My name's Katie.
Katie, so nice to meet you.
I'm a friend, and I have a master's degree in classics.
Classics? What?
Oh. So that's what the episode is
about. Thank you, producer Colin. I know you are fairly familiar with classics a little bit.
He's quite familiar.
But what are classics?
You know what? That's a difficult question because classics is a very broad discipline that has been going on for centuries. And is basically the study of ancient Greek and Roman history, archaeology, literature, language from the time period of 1400 BC to the time period of 1400 AD, like the fall of Rome. So it's pretty broad, so it's kind of hard to define. But if you think generally Greco-Roman studies, You got it.
Okay. So this is, I mean, from my understanding, it's, I know producer Colin studied it in a bit in high school, but it's seems to be more of like a higher education kind of study, like a very academic kind of study. So, but when did you get started with it?
So traditionally the classics were kind of just like part of education, up until the mid 1900s, really. People learned Latin and Greek in school. And by people, I mean men, because girls didn't go to school, but...
Just bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, so traditionally the classics were taught in school, and that means, I mean, there was the classical canon that was taught in school, so that means like Caesar, Julius Caesar, Cicero, all these
Virgil,
all these works by very famous authors were taught in school, just as a general gen eds like curriculum. And so, kind of after the World Wars, that study became a little less relevant, I guess. And so, it was not really really included in public schools or even private schools, generally.
How so? What was the change?
I mean, I think that people in the modern world decided that education was not for education's sake. You know, it wasn't just to be erudite for no particular reason other than social mobility. It was for a purpose of learning a trade or learning a skill or learning some sort of thing. So, and that's, I think, how education is in the modern world as well.
For the most part.
So, you know, you go to college to learn computer science so you can be a computer engineer and have a career in computer engineering. And so the classics kind of became a bit obsolete because, you know, you go to school to study classics and then to do what, you know? It's like either teach the classics or learn the classics or...
or.
I mean, that's kind of it.
Question mark.
You know, there's no productive in the traditional sense, career that you can form out of classics. And, you know, the English nobility, when they studied the classics, it was sort of like a mark of education to know things. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't really have to work for their living, so their education was more about knowing things than it was about anything else, you know. Just kind of to show off.
So, to pull the rug out from under, is that I studied the classics with Katie in college. But when you talk about that you like the classics, what is it, because it's history, it's language, it's culture, what is it that you like about, what's your area?
Okay.
If you will.
So, I'm a philologist, which means, I know you are, which means literally,
the audience does.
Which means lover of language, or logos, which means word, language, logic. It's kind of a complicated word, but in the modern sense, it means lover of language. And when I was in high school, I studied Japanese purely because it was the weirdest language my high school offered.
That's why I studied Chinese.
Yeah. So
French? I would say French was the weirdest language.
I mean,
language
French is pretty weird, I gotta
Chinese
say.
Chinese is weirder than French.
Have you met a...
I've met a lot of Chinese people.
I would say Chinese is weirder than Japanese as well. So I've always really loved languages, and I think that came from my childhood choral experience. So I was really involved in choir and all that stuff, and so we would sing songs in different languages, Latin included. And
what Latin songs?
I don't know, religious songs.
Gasolina.
Like Pia Jesu, you know, like religious songs.
Despacito.
Pia Jesu. So I think I got interested in languages from a young age just from singing in them and not really understanding what they meant. Just, it was cool to me. And so when I was in high school, I finally, because American education, we only learn languages in high school. We don't start earlier. And so I got this chance to learn Japanese, and I was like, great. Cool, weird language. I'm in.
Our high school did not offer Japanese.
No, it did not.
I had to specially apply. It was a public school, but I had to specially apply to learn it.
Oh, weird.
So, sort of like a magnet school in some way.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And so you studied Japanese, was that...
So Japanese was awesome, and I love Japanese. We can talk about that on a different episode, but...
We can talk about
right,
whatever
you only
we
get
want.
One.
Split two. But I think that kind of started my love of weird languages, and when I was in high school, I started reading a lot of novels by Mary Renault and Rosemary Sutcliffe, and they're English novelists from mid-century, thereabouts, who wrote real kind of historical fiction about the ancient world, Greek and Roman world. And I started to get super into kind of the history of it, the culture of it, and I started doing a little more research and very interested in it. So I decided, I think by the time I was like a junior in high school, that I wanted to study classics in college because I had been... You know, it was the language aspect that drew me. Like, I wanted to study Latin and Greek and finally know what these people were saying. And so I mean, I decided it way early on. I'm not really sure. You know, most people don't really know where their interests and hobbies come from and can't really pinpoint.
Unless it's trauma, like us.
Okay, well, without trauma. So wait, but you were studying Japanese.
Yeah.
So did you want to take this on instead of or in addition to? Or is this almost like a separate kind of study?
Well, I felt like I had gotten all that I wanted out of Japanese. Mm. Like, I studied it 4 years. I went to AP. I studied abroad in Japan in high school. And I was like, I was near fluent
at the
time.
What was her name?
What are you talking about?
You studied abroad.
Right. I was
abroad
near...
can mean, you know.
I'm aware.
Overseas
I'm aware.
Or a broad, meaning a female.
Don't say
it's a little
female
bit of innuendo.
By the time I was a senior in high school, I was near fluent in Japanese, and I felt, even though there was more to learn, that I had gotten as much stimulation as I could out of it. And so I wanted to study more languages. And so my first class in college, and I loved
it. Art of M.C. Escher. That was my first college class. Mm. Did you take Greek as a freshman?
Yes, I did.
Interesting. And that was your first Greek class?
Yeah. So I took both the same day, my first day of college.
Probably back-to-back in the same room,
It wasn't back-to-back.
Was it in the library? The classics library, quote-unquote?
It was different before you.
Before I came. Okay, age-old question. What do you like better, Latin or Greek?
When I first started learning the languages, and I learned them both at the same time, I liked Greek better because it's...
All right, this podcast is over.
A lot of table slamming today.
Lots of table slamming.
Whatever. We got the book. It absorbs the sound like a sponge.
It doesn't do anything.
I liked Greek better. Okay. And I honestly think it's because of my teacher. I had a really excellent freshman Greek teacher who just made it super fun all the time. But eventually, as I grew and as I learned, I realized I was just better at Latin. And at a certain point, you have to kind of understand where your strengths are and play to them. So I became a Latinist, which means basically I just focused on Latin literature. And Latin is such a beautiful, fluid language. And the thing, I love it so deeply. And here's why. So deep.
How deep was it? Don't worry, we cut out all the pauses, so we're good.
When I started reading Latin poetry, I realized that because Latin is not a word order language like English, it's an...
Pause.
Okay.
What?
Latin has cases. Word order doesn't matter in Latin.
Yeah.
So we would say the dog barked, and Latin it would be... It'd be the same. It'd be the dog barked. But if you said, you know, the boy ran up the hill, it would be up the hill.
No, it'd be the boy up the hill ran.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, other languages are like that too, right? Like Japanese and Chinese.
But it's not... Okay, so technically, Latin, if you put the words in the sentence in any order... At all.
Except for prepositional phrases.
Except for prepositional...
But even then.
Like, prepositional phrases have to go together. But if you basically, if you put the word in a sentence in any order, it would make sense.
Yeah, because you could cut up Latin and put it anywhere and you ideally would still be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it follows a pattern. The verb usually goes at the end.
There's a basic pattern and there's a basic...
So, there are five cases.
We're not going to explain the cases, Colin.
I mean... I know when I've got a good episode going, when I get technically. I need like a.
Strum and Coke is strong.
Count to technically.
So, many languages are in what they call inflected languages, which means they have cases instead of word order, which means the case of the word, the form of the word, dictates its function in sentence. Which means it doesn't matter where it is in the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
It still has the same form, and it therefore... So no matter what word order you have in Latin, it means the same thing. And when I discovered poetry in Latin, I realized that it has so much more potential than English poetry. Because in English poetry, you're limited by the fact that you have to still make sense. And so the word order still matters. But in Latin, you can put a word like three lines down and it's in the same sentence. And it'll still make sense because it's in the right form of the word in the sentence.
Hmm.
And so that's just so beautiful and appealing to me.
So who's your favorite Latin poet?
Marshall.
I don't think I've read Marshall.
Classic. I could have begged you for a Marshall fan. Oh, yeah.
Marshall Mathers? I first learned that Latin could be, like, actually pretty sweet when I was reading Ovid, The Metamorphoses, yeah. That which you're, I know you're reading
I'm now. Reading right now.
And there's a part where, I think it's someone's staff. I think it might be Hermes or whoever. It's 10 years. But someone's staff is surrounded, like, wrapped around by snakes. And in the Latin, the word staff is surrounded by
the
two
snakes,
words for
yeah.
snakes. So it's you know, a lot of people say that's cool. Who
it
can
is
say
cool.
it? It's so cool.
It's just awesome to learn a language that's both, like, orally, A-U-R, like, listening,
mm-hmm.
orally, visually, and just kind of intellectually beautiful. And
but when you say orally, A-U-R, as was specified, and orally, how much spoken, because, I mean, I studied Latin, obviously,
yeah.
since I was a freshman in high school, all throughout college. I taught Latin for 2 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I made my kids say it just to drill it into them because they were
your
young.
Children.
But
no, you're right.
My students, and I don't have children, but we very little of the language we read out loud we read all of it out loud, but it wasn't an oral. We didn't learn it for fluency. We learned
no,
it to
you're
read,
right.
We can read it and write it fluently, but we don't speak it fluently.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There are some spoken Latin camps and such things in the U.S. and in Europe.
But very niche.
They're very niche. Latin is a dead language because no one speaks it.
That is
anymore.
The thing that everybody
language.
Says when you say, you know, learning Latin, everybody responds with, it's a dead language. What does that mean?
It means it makes me want to be dead.
It's dead because no one speaks it as their primary mode of communication.
Mm-hmm. But is it something speakable? Can you actually speak it?
You can.
Andra, no.
Okay,
well,
what is
speaking Greek?
You just started speaking Greek. Okay.
I was gonna say the Odyssey.
No, you could.
What does that inflection mean?
What do you mean?
Like, you could. Implies
people
a but.
Don't. And
just
the thing is,
don't.
Like, when we learn Latin, we learn to read Latin. We don't learn to speak Latin. It's not like if you learn a modern language like French and the first thing you learn is, like, how to say where's the bathroom or 1, 2, 3 or what colors.
But then in Latin, you know, life is hard. Everyday barbarians sail to our, you know, lawn and burn our crops.
How do you
there
say
is,
that?
There is, we taught est difficile. Time, how do you say every day? Something, DM, doesn't matter. Barbari, nawi, geront, ad. I'm thinking of island. Insulam.
Insulam?
At, in kendunt. What's crops? I'm thinking of the grain. Copium, no, that's an abundance.
No, I'm,
Crops. Email us if you know the word for crops.
Email us a dumb nerd thing at gmail.com.
Basically, what Colin has demonstrated that when we learn Latin, and I have a graduate degree in Latin, and
etc. I taught Latin. I was
and
a
he
literal
taught Latin.
Teacher.
We don't learn how to speak it because there are no Romans alive who use that language as their first language. You know, we're never going to have to ask a Roman, like, hey, where's the nearest butcher shop? You know, we're never going to have to ask that. And so the focus is actually very different from learning a modern language. When you learn Latin and Greek, you learn the entire grammatical structure of the language in the first year that you study it. So 2 college semesters.
Or 1 freshman year.
Yeah.
Actually, 3 freshmen. 3
if you're
in
high school, it takes a bit longer, but... But basically, like, I learned them in college. I learned the entire grammatical structure and every single possible structure that exists in the language in the first year that I learned that
yeah,
language.
It's a lot less than other languages.
And because it's not supposed to be spoken because it's not a spoken language anymore. So you learn to read it. And that's really what we learned. Like, I can pick up some Latin and read it, you know.
I might not know all the vocab, but I could get...
Yeah,
could
you might not know all of the vocabulary, but if you know the grammar, you know Latin.
Wait, why is that? If you don't know all the vocabulary, how can you still figure it out?
Well, it's the same with
because
any language.
Because you know,
like,
you know, even if you don't know what the word is, Latin is a language that and Greek is a language that depends on the endings. The endings will tell you whether it's the subject, whether it's the object, if it's a type of verb.
Gotcha.
And you can say, I know that Caesar climbed the blank. I might not know that, you know, column is hill.
But you can kind of fill in the
Caesar
blanks.
Climbed the blank and attacked the camp. And I can think, oh, that must be hill. Look it up. Sure enough, Collus is hill. A lot of people say that might be derivative of my name. I might be a person from the hill.
the hill. You're a hill person.
Colin is a derivative of Nicholas, which means victory, Nike. Nike.
Cool victory.
That's
why the Nike symbol is a... There was a
This is a visual. Nike symbol. Boom.
But the Nike.
Most people know the Nike symbol. I think that's fair.
It's the swoosh, but what people don't know is that it's not going to work if you can't see it. But the Nike, the angel of victory, has her wings are like a sideways Nike swoosh where the swoosh is to the side, but it really is the wings of an angel, Nike, the goddess of victory. And that's why that's the symbol.
Yeah, wow. So Nike is the goddess of victory, and the Nike symbol represents her wings.
That is
that's
insane.
You could summarize that instead of babbling like an idiot. You know, there's a statue.
Oh, you're doing great. You're doing
great. I'm very nervous. I said we should drink before this. We didn't get enough in.
Okay, so what... I mean, I've been hearing about Latin and Greek for a long time.
No, you haven't. I do my best to keep work at work.
It has been a presence in my life. And I still could not tell you what really any of the differences are between Latin and Greek.
Oh.
What's that? What are both the cultural study language differences between the two?
It's like the difference between like Spanish and...
French?
Well, I was going to say Spanish and what's the...
Portuguese?
Portuguese, thank you.
No, I think it's more like the difference between Spanish and French. Because they're quite different.
Well, they have different alphabets, for starters.
Well, yeah, so like if they're quite different, why is it...
Here's the problem, is the Latin stole everything from Greek.
Yeah.
As the Romans and then people...
Basically, the Greeks were a more ancient civilization. So they had their own alphabet, they had their own literary tradition... and then the Romans came along hundreds of years later. And the reason they're so similar is because the Romans basically stole everything. Their mythology, their literary...
And put it in a new slightly new context.
Yeah, I mean, they changed it a bit. Mm-hmm. But so they basically like took the Greeks as their archetype and made their own tradition. And that's why they're so interconnected.
It's a lot like why, you know, it's easy to mix up the Hellenic period with the Hellenistic period, because that's what's, you know, like the Renaissance, like, took everything from the Latin and Greek period, and, you know, that's why there's people who think, you know, Michelangelo is a Roman when he's, you know, he's Italian. Hmm. But you think of, like...
Donatello came later.
Raphael
and Leonardo and Michelangelo, but Donatello came way later. Why is he...
Well, because it was the purple turtle, right? I'm no fool.
He does machines.
But what the hell was I saying? Oh, but if you think of the word like barbaros, like barbar is...
it's a Greek word.
No, that's babar. And he loved to learn.
Oh, babar!
He's also like
I went out one time. You were going to cut this, but I brought babar to the club. And I was like, you know, babar, like that girl's been looking at you. And he's like, no, I like learning. It's like, babar... Be cool. Like, we're in the club. We don't need this right now. But anyway, barbar, it was like a, you know, a derogatory term for, like, how other people who didn't spoke Greek, it was barbar. It was like gibberish.
Bar.
Like, we would say Babel. And that's why they're called Babylonian. Preach? Because of, you know, it was babbling to them. But barbar means foreigner to the Greeks. But when it turns into Latin, it means barbarian. And that's where we get the word from. And then okay, you're going to have to help me out with this.
Okay. Because
we talked about it all the time when I was student teaching, but Lego
Mm-hmm.
Means to... What does it mean in Greek? Does it mean to speak?
So in Greek it means to speak.
Right, and it... Because in Latin it means to read.
Or because, to choose.
Isn't that also to release...
That doesn't help my end.
It's to release one's waffle, right?
Yes, and also it's a Danish word that means I play. That's actually what it means. I'm going to make a joke, but that's why it's called Lego. But Lego, you know, Lego, Lexo, Lexa is to speak. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Greek.
In Latin, it means to read, also to choose, but that doesn't... That,
but
does
that actually makes
with...
sense, though.
Because... Hold on. We gotta walk them into this. Because when you read in Latin, you have to read out loud. Right?
In the ancient world, people read
so
out loud, and there was no such thing as reading silently.
Okay.
So okay. That's how Lego turned it from speaking to reading. You're, you know, almost like reciting.
Okay.
And then it turned to choose or to pick because when you're reading, you're picking, you know, we say in English, we're picking out the letters, we're picking out words, and we're kind of just like discerning, I guess.
Okay.
Discern has a similar definition
I see
to
the
pick.
Analogy.
And so it kind of means in Latin, in later Latin, to pick. Or pluck, you know, because you're picking out letters, you're picking out words,
mm-hmm.
And it's all interrelated, and that's how language develops and changes and transforms, and that's what's so amazing and beautiful to me.
Mm.
Like, that's kind of one of the things that makes me nerdy about it, because language is constantly changing and constantly, like, transforming, and it's a window into human thought. And human, just humanity, because the way, when you think about the way something changed throughout history, you can see how those people thought.
Hmm. And that's what's beautiful about the combination of studying Greek and Latin, is you see that kind of developing.
And that's what's beautiful about studying any language.
Yeah, any language. It just so happened that we picked Greek and Latin.
Yeah.
But I mean, with the combination of Greek and Latin, you see, like, it's...
I think
there's a lot you get out of it.
There's a lot you get out of it.
Also, the reason they're taught together is because of convenience. It's if you understand Latin, it's a lot easier than most to understand Greek.
Because of the structure and syntax of the languages
and all that.
They are, even though they have different alphabets, they're still kind of similar languages. You know, they're still Indo-European and they have a similar structure. So they're taught together.
If I could intervene just for a second, just to backtrack.
Yeah, just intervene once for a second.
Shut up. In the Paris Review, one of my favorite articles ever written.
Okay.
You were not there, but we were studying for
I
a
was
final,
not there.
And I of course, if any Latin student has probably read this article, but we stumbled upon it again studying for a final, which was killer. It was on. Lucretius, who's one of my favorite
authors.
I love
Lucretius.
I wrote my thesis on Lucretius and Virgil. I compared, you know, De Rerum Natura to the Aeneid. For any Latin nerds out there.
You wrote your, like, capstone on De Rerum Natura?
And the Aeneid, yeah. I compared the two.
I wrote my capstone on De Rerum Natura.
And? What was the other text?
And actually, St. Augustine's Confessions.
Oh, that would not have been my choice. I was the best paper I've ever written in any of my academic life. Thanks to my awesome capstone teacher who helped me write a really good paper. But in the Paris Review, September 21st, 2017. So I was out of... It must be reposted because I remember hearing about it in college. In high school, I mean, which would have been pre-2017. Human life is punishment and other pleasures of studying Latin. I'm going to read a very, very, very short excerpt. Here are some sentences you're likely to encounter in beginner French or Spanish. I would like a salad. This is a pencil. Where is the library? Here are some actual sentences that appear context-free in the first few chapters of Wheelock. Wheelock is the...
The general
Wheelock.
Latin textbook.
It's a Latin textbook. You are in great danger. Few men have true friends, and even fewer are deserving of them. Human life is punishment. Our translation exercises are epic, portentous, full of grandeur and violence. Wheelock is particularly preoccupied with the idiom poenas dare, which he translates as to pay the penalty. People in Wheelock are always paying the penalty for their anger, their greed, their foolishness. You are all to blame, thunders one sentence, and tomorrow you will pay the penalty. As with all of Wheelock's sentences, you can easily imagine it delivered by a Hollywood supervillain. Seize him, you fools! It's an awesome article.
Wow.
Please forward that to me.
I will. I probably have already, and you just were like, oh, haha, so funny, and didn't respond, which is...
Yes,
yeah, it's fine.
Definitely probably what happened.
Wow. Okay, so you studied it in college, and then what happened? What made you want to continue studying it? What path did you take?
So
the road less traveled.
Yeah, it is a bit of a road less traveled situation. Like, the classics, once you love it, you want to, like... It's a dying field. Not a lot of people study it anymore. And so...
But it's been dying for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years.
Dying on the vine, as they say.
Because it's just not relevant to the modern world.
It's more... Here's the thing. It's more relevant to the modern world than they...
It is, they actually. Like, if you...
Wait, how so?
Okay, so the literature that you study, you read it and you analyze it and you think, like, oh, this is human nature. And you also see, like, very disturbing parallels between, say, Roman emperors like Nero and, say, presidents like Trump. And you're reading this.
We don't want to date. We don't want to date.
We're gonna beep out that name.
We might put this out in 2025. And
what are you trying to say? I'm slow to edit and post.
Well, you know, we put them out when they benefit us.
Okay. So wait,
and it's
continue.
Studying, I mean, there's a reason they call it the humanities. So, like, it's a field in the humanities. Studying the humanities is really studying, like, the human condition.
Yeah,
and the,
absolutely.
Just, like, the everything that makes us human, be it art or politics or culture or religion, like, that's why the humanities are so important. And nobody understands this because it's in the capitalist mindset, the humanities don't matter.
Well, like, you can't understand it until you've been like, until like you've encountered it, because you don't know, like, oh my God, like that's how I think and feel. Like,
yeah.
until you see it. I talked to is actually a math teacher at our high school. Years later, I came back. And I was in college at the time, and was with my friend who was also studying classics. And I was like, we told him, we're studying the classics, and he started talking to us. I mean, this is strictly conjecture based. I have no evidence of this, but I assume he wasn't lying to me. Is that when the bankers, because everyone, as Katie had said earlier, it was mandated to study the classics. That was just what education was.
Yeah.
A significant portion of it. And when they switched from people who were classically trained and like the humanities and all that to people who were trained in specifically math, that's when everything failed, because they didn't understand all the moving parts of everything.
And that's why I really appreciate like a liberal arts education, because everyone complains about, if you're a humanities major, you have to take math and science and whatever, and if you're a science major, then you have to take humanities, and
right.
Everyone's like, ugh, I have to take this dumb class that doesn't matter to me. But I don't think people view it in the right way. Like, the reason liberal arts education exists is because being a well-rounded, well-educated person is really important to making a better world.
Not to really date us, but when we... were in college, it was the height of the 2016 election, and Ben Carson was running for president, and
mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, boy, did that go on longer than anyone thought.
And but, now, here in the year 2024, he's been elected.
But everyone said Ben Carson is the best example of why you need a well-rounded education, why you can't just study science classes to be a surgeon.
He's a surgeon, isn't he?
He was a surgeon,
yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Of course, makes me wonder... Are we? Is med school?
Hey, my dad's a surgeon.
Your dad is no Ben Carson.
True,
I can say that. But the thing about studying the classics, like, I took the capstone class, and I thought, this is stupid. I want to get out of here and get my degree and go on to teaching because I know more than all these people. 2 years later, oh, these people, I could use some help. But we, you know, we'd have to read these little, you know, Greek plays and Greek stories and Latin and, you know, Roman stories and all that jazz. But I was reading, I was with you, actually. We were doing homework, and we were having our classic, yeah, the very same. We were having
doing
a Roman Coke night
drinking.
While we were doing while we were doing our homework. And we used to live together.
I'm there.
And then we moved in together again. And I was reading, Ajax, the play by Sophocles. And at first I'm like, this is stupid, you know, that everyone... I used to always say that Roman, and I still say, because that's true, that Romans and Greeks are the stupidest people who have ever lived, because, like, the invention between, like, the second and the third actor was, like, 100 years. Like, it took them 100, like...
I have no idea what you mean.
So, with Roman and Greek plays, it started off as there was one actor, and it was a monologuing thing.
Gotcha.
And over time, someone thought, hey, what if there was another actor? Maybe... make it a dialogue, which I understand is a huge jump to go from a monologue to a dialogue. It's a different thing. But after the second actor, you gotta think the third actor couldn't have been that far behind. Maybe a month, if that. Maybe a weekend. It was like 100 years. something really stupid. I mean, that's
these guys sound awesome.
Don't fact check me. They were idiots. They just couldn't think of anything.
Couldn't even invent an iPhone.
Yeah.
Cullen,
no, there was no Grubhub, there was no
was
Uber
Eats. It was a culturally imbued art form.
I know. I'm only joking. I'm speaking it mostly in jest. But I read, so I'm thinking, like, what do these idiots have to say? Like, let's read Ajax by Sophocles. And I was like, oh, yeah, I see.
What
Ajax,
do you see?
Ajax is, Ajax is this guy. He was the, I don't know if you've heard of Ajax dish soap, but it's stronger than Greece, is there? Slogan.
Ooh, damn, is that why that's a dish soap?
Yeah, Ajax in the Iliad.
Stronger than Greece.
Is the strongest of all of Greece. He's the most, besides Achilles, I guess.
Yeah, but
well, it doesn't matter.
Whatever.
But he's this big war hero, and he comes back, and he doesn't know why, but he's with his friend, and he freaks out one night and kills all his sheep, and that causes something like that. Right? It's been a while since I read it. But that causes a big stir, and, you know, people have gone
because
back
and said...
Because
he kills all the sheep, and, like, they
and, like,
depended
a blind,
on sheep
and, like, a blind rage, and people...
Their food and clothing.
Right, so people...
And milk.
Say that that's the first ever account of PTSD. And so you're reading it, and you're like, oh, you know, this is... Maybe this is relevant to my life or anyone's life or whatever.
No, it is. And, like, his, you know, slave wife.
Yeah, it's a little fuzzy.
It's a little fuzzy. The woman who he took from Troy, who apparently loves him. Maybe has Stockholm Syndrome, but apparently loves him.
Yeah, we give the author a little liberties there.
And it's just, I don't know, like, I just think Tecmessa is a very compelling character in that show.
Like, when I read it, I was like, oh. Okay, I don't want to read this anymore. If I thought this guy sucked before, he certainly does now.
And the quote from that play is, Ento phronein meren herisos bios.
Show off.
And that means, that is, you know what that means? It's ignorance is bliss. And so it's when he...
What does it literally mean, though? It's probably ignorance to a mind is beneficial.
You know what it literally, means? It's in the knowing of nothing is sweetest life.
Oh, no, God, that sucks.
But it means ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, I bet you would.
It's Ajax right before he kills himself.
Yeah.
And he's super ashamed about what he's done. Super ashamed about what he's done, and he's ruined everyone's chances of everything, and he's just like, this fucking sucks, I need to kill myself.
yeah.
And
so
he's holding his baby son, you know, And his baby son has no idea what's just happened. And he's telling this to his baby son, like, ignorance is bliss. Like, you don't know what just happened. You are innocent. And then he falls on a sword and he dies. And it's just, like, fucking sad.
Of the so there's, okay, so this is just going to prove how much I have forgotten since I've studied this. I can tell you what to do if a kid, you know, tries to start a fight in the classroom, but I can tell you anything about the classics. There's three Greek tragedians, the main ones. Sophocles is the first.
No, Aeschylus.
Aeschylus is the first, then Sophocles, then Euripides.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard the story, the classic story, a guy, you know, in ancient Greek, you know, they didn't really have pants. They had togas. So he goes into a...
They didn't really have pants.
He goes into a tailor and, you know, two ancient Greek guys are talking and the tailor says, Euripides? He goes, yeah, Eumenides? Those are two Greek. Just cut that. Anyway, you can clear... Aeschylus has a very bare bones...
Euripides, I don't even get that.
Like Euripides, pants. Oh yeah, Eumenides.
Eumenides
is also a Greek.
Eumenides.
No. Euripides is the author. Eumenides is an Aeschylus play.
Just cut this all. But Eumenides probably exists
at this point.
But you can see the clear evolution. Aeschylus is pretty bare bones.
I love Aeschylus.
But Sophocles is certainly more sophisticated than
Why do you love icicles?
And Euripides is even more sophisticated.
It's not icicles. It's not an icicle.
He said it exactly how I said it.
I said it exactly how he said it. And I've never sat through a single fucking Latin and Greek class. I don't know. Don't come at me for this shit.
No, icicles is interesting because...
That's what I said! Icicles! What am I saying?
Icicles. Aeschylus
is
interesting.
Oh, please cut this. Please, for your sake, please cut this.
Aeschylus. Aeschylus.
But I think Colin was on a roll. Like, what are you...
Oh, I just mean... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, when I think about, like, the playwrights, it's Aeschylus, you know, what did he have? The Persians, which is, like...
Yeah.
Almost, like... Okay, it's not historical.
No.
But it's that's what they like thought to write about is like things of importance. Like this couldn't have been long after Herodotus, or at least close by Herodotus.
It was relatively soon after.
I act like I know what I'm talking about. I don't. But you know, that's what they knew was war and like big picture stuff, but then it gets a little more personal with Sophocles. And then by the time you get to Euripides, I mean, Medea can hold its own with any story told today. You know, Medea falls in love with this guy. He leaves her. She kills her children to get back at him. It's super. I mean, that's people say that's like, you know, shows like The Sopranos, or, you know, takes from Medea. Yeah, that got you listening. You can clearly you can so perfectly see with the three great tragedians how, you know,
how drama developed.
Exactly.
I mean, you can literally watch and read drama as it exists today develop. And it's amazing. And again, like, human art forms like drama, like TV shows, like any of that, they're all so human. And when you study the classics, you get to, like, the base humanity of all of that. And you kind of get to analyze, like, why does this speak to me? Why does this speak to you? And that's what's so compelling about it.
It's like, and it shows even all this time later, you know, almost...
Yeah, thousands of years.
Thousands of years later. I was going to say almost 100 years later. like it, still, at the end of the day, the thesis is the same.
Yeah.
And it's just about, like, the human
It's almost
human
like we're
condition.
Stuck in a cycle of
I mean,
oppression.
It just shows that like, we're all human, you know. Whether we were 2,000 years ago in ancient Greece or whether we're not, like, we kind of feel the same things and think the same thought, and it's humbling and beautiful.
And on the other end, you know, not obviously, you know, that's very like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's very
summary.
No, well, anyway, the tragedians, you know, they show the human condition, and it's very like centering to understand that, like, they felt like we felt. But if you've read like a Greek comedy like Aristophanes is hilarious. Like, the stuff still holds up today. There's a part where Greek plays at a chorus, and his chorus is made up of dogs. And when the chorus speaks, it's just woof woof bow wow, you know, the Greek equivalent. And there's a part where, like, I don't remember what it was. I don't remember if it was frogs or one of the.
I love frogs.
Frogs is really funny. They're all really.
Frogs are really funny.
No, frogs is one of the titles.
Frogs are funny though.
Frogs are pretty funny.
But the chorus of dogs gets distracted because someone brings out puppies and they can't like make a good judgment. It really, you read it and it's like, this is actually hilarious.
At the same time, there are some things that don't really read to a modern audience. And when you're studying them, that's part of studying them, is because you have to learn, like, the politics and the history around that and, like, why.
But once you understand it, it's still...
Once you understand it, it's
accessible. Someone today, if Aristophanes was put to an equivalent today, I think it would hold up quite well.
Yeah.
Just goes to show, comedy is an ancient tradition that shouldn't be messed with. Seinfeld. Yes. Ever since Seinfeld was introduced, comedy is...
Okay.
I don't know, Seinfeld's kind of new comedy, though.
I love Seinfeld.
Like, new comedy, Hellenistic.
Katie. As the guest of this episode.
Yeah.
What would you like to be your closing thoughts on the classics, and to anybody who is now, hey, I'm interested in what you've been saying. How can I get started? Base level. Maybe not even studying, but, you know, finding the best aspects.
Yeah, I think if you're just baseline interested in the classics and what the ancient Greeks and Romans had to say about human life, just find a good English translation and read some stuff. You know, like, Caesar's boring. Ignore him.
Oh, Caesar's awesome. Caesar's great. Don't listen. Don't. Obviously, she's been drinking. Don't listen to her. Caesar's awesome.
But, I mean, there are so many genres. Like there are in the modern world, there are so many genres in literature. So in the ancient world, it's the same. So pick something you're interested in. In general, like politics or poetry or art or architecture, and you can find something.
Catullus.
All right, we didn't talk about Catullus.
Oh,
but we're
my
not
gosh, no, we won't. But I mean, like, Catullus blows most modern poets out of the water.
Catullus
so good
blows modern poets out of the water. Yes, very good. But find something you're interested in and just like. Read that in English translation. And if you're more interested, then go study the languages and start to read it in their original language. Because, like any language, reading in translation, just, you know, stuff gets lost in translation. Like the movie.
What movie?
Lost in translation.
Sofia Coppola. Bill Murray. Who's the girl?
What's the name of the movie?
Lost in Translation.
Oh!
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Movie.
But if you're a philologist, like, you know, a lot of people are interested in the culture, which is mostly what we talked about today. People are interested in the history. People are, if you're like Katie,
yeah,
or
whatever
like
you're interested in,
you can
find it.
It's easy to find a guide to learn Latin or learn Greek, and it's you know, they'll take. It's not an easy. By no means is it an easy.
It's not
to
easy.
Learn.
It's.
But,
you know, but if you're
but
interested
if you like
in languages
it, it's, you know, it's not
and
difficult.
You're
it's just
invested
you
in learning a language, then you can do it.
Well, thanks for coming on and talking about classics. I feel like you could come on for a whole other episode about classics.
Totally
I could talk about Catullus for another 2 hours.
And maybe we will.
You know what we should do?
Write into dumbnerdthing@gmail.com if you want Colin to rant about Catullus for 2 hours. And I'll put it up.
He invented the timeline on Twitter.
All right.